The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious, Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. We are really excited today to cut through some of the noise out there.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of it.
Yeah, we're doing it with, well, one of the absolute best guides to thinking clearly ever written, Carl Sagan's amazing book, The Demon-Haunted World, Science is a Candle in the Dark.
It's incredible how relevant that book still feels. It was written back in the 90s, right?
Yeah, 90s.
But you look around today, we've got, you know, all this technology, instant information.
Yeah, everything at our fingertips.
Exactly. And yet it feels like we're just swimming in conspiracy theories, pseudoscience, just bad information everywhere. It's quite a paradox.
It really is staggering. We depend on science for, well, everything. From our phones to medicine.
Sure.
But the actual way of thinking behind it all, that seems constantly under attack. So our mission today really is about intellectual self-defense.
Good way to put it.
We want to unpack why Sagan called science a candle in the dark. And maybe most importantly, equip you, our listener, with his brilliant baloney detection kit.
Okay, so before we jump into the kit itself, maybe we should talk a bit about Sagan. Who was this guy?
Absolutely. Carl Sagan. He lived from 1934 to 1996. He wasn't just an astronomer or a planetary scientist, though he was definitely top tier in those fields.
Right. Cornell professor, involved with NASA, the Voyager missions. Serious scientific credentials.
Totally. But what really made him unique, I think, was his passion for communication. He wasn't just stuck in the lab.
No. He was the face of science for millions. That Cosmos TV series, it was huge.
It really was. He could take these incredibly complex ideas about the universe and make them sound, well, poetic, accessible, exciting even.
And that combination is crucial to understanding this book. He had this deep rigor of a scientist, but also this profound sense of wonder, like an almost spiritual awe about the cosmos.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. He was optimistic about human potential, but also deeply worried, really concerned about our tendency towards self-delusion, you know? Wishful thinking.
Yeah. And he saw that as a real threat. The demon-haunted world is kind of his final big argument for reason.
Yeah.
For using critical thinking to protect ourselves, our society, even democracy.
It's powerful stuff. So let's dig into the book itself. What's the main idea?
Well, the core premise is really about redefining what science is.
Mm.
A lot of people think it's just like a big encyclopedia of facts.
Right, a list of things we know.
But Sagan argues it's much more than that. It's fundamentally a way of thinking, a method. It's skeptical, it's self-correcting, it relies on evidence. It's basically our best tool for figuring out what's real.
And the demons in the title.
Yeah, those aren't literal demons, obviously. They're metaphors for, for ignorance, superstition, for just accepting wild claims without asking questions.
So things like what? Astrology, alien abductions, miracle cures that don't have any proof.
Exactly. Or even sophisticated conspiracy theories. Anything where belief trumps evidence. The demons are the shadows that creep in when we stop thinking critically.
And he saw a real danger there, didn't he? Not just people believing silly things.
Oh, absolutely. The core danger, as Sagan saw it, is that widespread scientific illiteracy makes a whole society vulnerable.
Vulnerable how?
Vulnerable to manipulation. If people can't tell the difference between solid evidence and just appealing nonsense, then it's easy for charlatans or, you know, demagogues to take advantage.
Which threatens the whole democratic process, right? If we can't agree on basic facts.
Precisely. So the book isn't just about science. It's about equipping citizens to think clearly for the sake of, well, everyone. A survival guide for the information age, maybe.
Okay, so if we're so easily fooled, why? Why do people fall for pseudoscience?
That's a key part of the book. Sagan digs into the psychology. It's not usually because people are stupid. Pseudoscience often feels good. It offers comfort.
Simple answers to complicated questions.
Exactly. Certainty in an uncertain world. A sense of control, maybe. Or feeling like you're in on a secret. It meets real emotional needs.
And our brains kind of play tricks on us too, right? He talks about that pattern recognition thing.
Pareidolia. Yeah, that's huge. We're wired to see patterns, faces, meaning even in random noise.
Like seeing a face in the clouds or the man in the moon.
Or the famous face on Mars. That's his classic example. An early NASA photo showed this rock formation that in that specific light looked uncannily like a giant carved face.
And people went wild with it, right? Aliens, ancient Martian civilizations.
Oh, yeah. But then, you know, science did its thing. Better cameras, different angles, more data. And it turned out to be just a mesa, a trick of light and shadow.
But the idea was so appealing.
That's the point.
Yeah.
That desire to believe, that hope, it means something.
Yeah.
It's powerful. And it makes us susceptible.
He also draws that fascinating line between older beliefs, like demons and succubi, and modern stories of alien abduction. He suggests they might come from the same psychological roots.
Yeah, he explores things like sleep paralysis, hypnagogic hallucinations, those vivid, dreamlike states when you're falling asleep or waking up.
Experiences that feel incredibly real to the person having them.
Absolutely terrifyingly real. But they have no neurological explanations. We don't need to invoke aliens or demons. The point is, our own senses and memories, they're not always reliable witnesses. Understanding that is sort of the first step.
Okay, so if our brains can fool us, and pseudoscience is so tempting, what's the fix? How do we correct for that?
Right. That brings us to the heart of the book, the toolkit for critical thinking. And he introduces it with that brilliant parable, the dragon in the garage.
Ah, yes. The invisible dragon. Love this one.
It's perfect, isn't it? Someone claims there's a dragon in their garage. You say, okay, let's see it. They say, well, it's invisible.
Okay. Can we hear it? Feel its heat?
Nope. And it's incorporeal. And it breathes heatless fire.
Can we sprinkle flour to see footprints?
But it floats. Every single test you propose is shot down with another special, untestable condition.
So what's the point he's making?
The huge point is, if a claim cannot, even in principle, be tested, if there's no way to check it, no way to potentially prove it wrong.
If it's unfalsifiable.
Exactly. Then the claim is empty, tells you nothing about the world, it's meaningless. And from that, he establishes a key rule. The burden of proof is on the person making the claim. Especially if it's an extraordinary claim.
Okay, so that sets the stage for the actual toolkit, the baloney detection kit.
Yep, chapter 12. And this isn't just, like, for scientists and labs. This is for everyday life, for navigating the news, health claims, political arguments, everything.
So what are some of the key tools in this kit for, you know, for us, for the listener?
Okay, number one, always look for independent confirmation of the facts. If only one source is reporting something amazing, especially if they have a vested interest, be skeptical.
Right. Don't just take one person's word for it. What else?
Remember that principle of falsifiability we just talked about.
Yeah.
Ask yourself, is there any conceivable way this claim could be proven false? If not, it's not a scientific claim. It's belief.
Got it. Testable and potentially falsifiable.
Then there's Occam's razor. This is super useful. If you have a couple of different explanations for something and they both seem to fit the facts.
Choose the simpler one.
Generally, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't invent complicated conspiracies or supernatural forces if a simpler explanation like error, misunderstanding, or even fraud works just as well.
Keep it simple, basically.
And another big one. Always try to think of multiple working hypotheses. Don't just latch on to the first explanation that pops into your head. Actively try to come up with other ways to explain what you're seeing.
That fights against confirmation bias, right? Where you only look for evidence that supports what you already believe.
Exactly. You have to actively challenge your own ideas. And finally, the kit helps you spot logical fallacies.
Oh, the dirty tricks and arguments. We see those everywhere.
We really do. Like ad hominem attacks.
Attacking the person instead of their argument. You can't trust him. He's whatever.
Right. Or the argument from authority. Just because someone famous or someone with doctor, before their name says something, doesn't automatically make it true. Where's their evidence? Is it testable?
Okay, so we have the tools now, but Sagan really emphasizes the stakes, doesn't he? It's not just an intellectual game.
No, not at all. He uses the horrifying example of the European witch hunts to show what happens when skepticism collapses on a societal scale.
That's a really powerful section of the book.
It's chilling. He lays out how things like spectral evidence claims only the accuser could supposedly see, combined with a complete lack of due process, and confessions extracted under torture.
Led to the deaths of tens of thousands of people, mostly women.
Yeah. And the parallel he draws is stark. That same breakdown in critical thinking, that same reliance on fear and untestable accusations, it can fuel modern moral panics, too. It shows the real-world devastating cost of abandoning reason.
But it's not all doom and gloom, is it? He ends on a more hopeful note.
Oh, definitely. His ultimate message is actually incredibly optimistic. He calls it the marriage of skepticism and wonder.
I like that phrase.
Me too. The idea is we're skeptical not because we want to be killjoys, but because skepticism clears away the nonsense, the illusions, the comforting lies.
So we can see what's really there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the actual verified wonders of the universe that science reveals. They are far more awesome, more intricate, and more beautiful than any pseudoscience or superstition we could invent. Skepticism lets us appreciate the real magic.
That's a great transition into the core themes then, the big takeaways. What's theme number one?
I'd say it's that core idea. Science is a method, not just a body of knowledge. It's not just what you know, it's how you know it.
Right. And that makes you think, doesn't it? When you face a problem, maybe at work, maybe something personal, are you looking for the easy answer, the one that feels good? Or are you using a reliable process to find out what's actually true?
That choice matters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, theme two, the dangerous link between pseudoscience and anti-democratic impulses.
Explain that a bit more.
Well, if a society gets comfortable rejecting evidence, if people are easily swayed by, you know, charismatic leaders who dismiss facts, that society is really vulnerable.
Vulnerable to tyranny, basically.
Yeah. Sagan argues that critical thinking isn't just a personal skill, it's a civic duty. Essential for voters trying to make sense of complex issues.
Makes sense. What's next?
Theme three is his empathy for the human need to believe. Sagan gets it. He understands why myths and easy answers are so appealing.
He's not just bashing people for believing things.
Not at all. He acknowledges that deep emotional need for comfort, for meaning, but he argues that science, that rigorous inquiry, ultimately offers a more authentic and durable source of wonder and meaning than any false belief can.
A deeper kind of satisfaction, maybe?
Perhaps. And the last big theme, I think, is the fallibility of human perception. Our brains, our senses, our memories. They're just not perfect instruments.
We misremember things. We see patterns that aren't there.
Exactly. So we can't just trust our gut feelings or anecdotes.
Yeah.
We need external checks. We need evidence that other people can examine and verify. Demand proof.
Sagan was just so good at boiling these big ideas down into memorable lines, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. A master communicator. We should definitely share a few key quotes.
Okay, you start. What's the quintessential Sagan standard?
Has to be. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
The Easier principle. Yeah. Simple but profound. If you tell me it's raining, I'll probably take your word for it.
Sure.
If you tell me you saw Elvis riding a unicorn, I'm going to need a bit more than just your say-so.
Exactly. The burden of proof scales with the unlikeliness of the claim. Okay, your turn.
How about this one on balancing skepticism and openness? It pays to keep an open mind, but not so open your brains fall out.
Huh. Classic. Perfect balance, right? Don't be so cynical you reject everything new, but don't be so gullible you believe anything. You need that critical filter.
It's about being discerning, not dismissive.
Right. And the last one, maybe the ultimate challenge to untestable ideas, comes straight from the dragon parable.
Let me guess. What's the difference between an invisible, incorporeal, floating dragon who spits heatless fire and no dragon at all?
That's the one. If your claim makes no observable difference to the universe, if it predicts nothing, forbids nothing, can't be tested in any way,
then for all practical purposes, it doesn't exist. It's a meaningless assertion.
It's just words. Okay, so how do we apply all this? What are the real life applications for you, the listener?
Well, the most obvious one is just navigating the information age. Seriously, use that baloney detection kit every single day.
Like when you see a crazy headline on social media.
Exactly. Or a shocking statistic or some political attack ad. Ask, who's saying this? What's their evidence? Is it confirmed anywhere else? What might be their agenda? Are they trying to make me scared or angry instead of making me think?
Critical filtering online is crucial. What else?
Think about medical and financial decisions. This is where gullibility can cost you dearly. Your health, your savings.
Right. Those miracle cures. Fad diets, promising impossible results, investment schemes that sound way too good to be true.
Demand that extraordinary evidence. Understand the difference between correlation, two things happening together, and causation, one thing actually causing the other. That's a big one they use to trick people.
Definitely. And a third area.
Maybe parenting and education. This book is fantastic for thinking about how we teach kids, not just what to think, stuffing them with facts.
But how to think.
Exactly. How to be curious, ask good questions, but also how to be critical, how to evaluate evidence. Building that resilience against misinformation from a young age seems vital.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up, what's one thing that really struck you revisiting this book?
For me, it was the realization, maybe more strongly this time, that scientific thinking isn't just for scientists. It's not some niche activity for people in lab coats.
Mm.
It's a fundamental survival tool for every citizen, for navigating life, for participating in a democracy. It's deeply human, driven by that basic curiosity.
Yeah, I get that. What stood out for me was how Sagan reframes skepticism. It often gets portrayed as negative, you know, cynical, just tearing things down.
Right, being a debunker.
But he presents it as this incredibly positive, empowering thing. It's a process of active inquiry. It's how you clear away the fog to find something real, something authentic. It actually leads to wonder, not away from it.
That's a fantastic insight. So the final thought for you, our listener, comes straight from Sagan's core message.
It's a challenge, really, a question to ask yourself.
Are you actively tending to your own candle in the dark? Are you demanding evidence, questioning assumptions, pushing back against comforting myths?
Or are you, maybe unintentionally, letting those shadows of ignorance, of wishful thinking, creep in and shape what you believe? It's an ongoing process for all of us.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.